why would I want to have Rick Astley angry at me? You know, that would be that would be a bad thing. Thank you, exactly.
Welcome back to the Boundless Book Club, the bi-weekly podcast from the Emirates Literature Foundation, bringing you all the literary stardust your heart desires. Before we get started, we have a survey for you to tell us what you like and what you don't like. Please click on the link in the show notes and you could win a stack of fantastic signed books. Today, you are here with...
Ahla.
Andrea.
And me, Annabelle. But just because it is our voices you hear doesn't mean there aren't other characters shining far, far brighter. Now we are here in the middle of award season. We want to recognise the star qualities of the supporting cast of some of our favourite stories. We will be joined by a very special guest shortly who knows all about casting absolute legends in supporting roles. It is the one and only Jasper Ford, author of absurdist fiction, wildly funny and always surprising, including the Thursday Next series. His most recent book, The Constant Rabbit, came out last year. But first, I want to hear which books you are drawing on for your nominations for the big gold Boundless Trophy for Best Supporting Character.
Yeah, this theme, I think, was a little bit challenging. It was difficult to really find, you know, the lots of options of strong supporting characters without whom, you know, the storyline would be completely changed. But it was a really good exercise and I'm really excited about who I have.
Andrew, did you find it difficult as well?
I didn't, but I think that's just, it's all to do with what you've read recently, isn't it? So what's top of mind? So I think, interestingly, that my supporting character, the story could roll out completely without him, really. Mm-hmm. But he's so great. So
see, that's interesting. So what makes a great supporting character to you guys?
This is why I found it difficult, is because some supporting characters in books serve like crucial functions whereby, like you say, the novel wouldn't progress without them. Mm-hmm. And then there are others where their presence is just a joy to read. And I think the novel would be like lackluster without them there.
Yeah.
And I think thinking about this as well, the supporting characters that always came to mind were either in classics where there was a bigger cast of characters, mm-hmm. or like YA or fantasy, where again, like a lot of supporting characters will appear and then they'll get more page time later on. So there'll be like these separate quests going on with these characters and then they kind of converge. And then you realize later on why said supporting character in a later book in the series is actually really, really crucial. And that's like quite a common thing, I think, in like dystopian and fantasy fiction. But trying to think of that in the more contemporary fiction books that we've been reading lately was a little bit difficult.
Yeah.
I think a great supporting character has to be someone who doesn't just move the story forward. Mm. They've got to be like actual real people, multidimensional, with their own things going on. And I think in some books you find a lot of characters that are like, they appear just to pass a message on and then you don't really see them. So even though they're important just for their function, you could replace them with anyone and you wouldn't miss them.
Some characters, yes, they add something to the pleasure of the story, whether it's a good sense of humor or just having an interesting character. But then some supporting characters you just wonder more about. You're like, I want to know more about the backstory of this character, or what happened to this character, you know, and a couple of years down the line, and you kind of wonder and want a little bit more.
Do you want to tell us about your supporting character, Ahlam?
Yeah, I'd love to. So So when I chose this character and I told Andrea, her response to this was, this character is one of the greatest literary stars of all time. And it is a tragedy that she is not the protagonist of the story. And it's so true. And then Annabelle, a minute later, said, oh my God, I was literally just thinking about this character. So I think it was a really strong choice in that all of us kind of like feel strongly about Miss Havisham, who is my character for today. Lots of Miss Havisham fans here today.
Yeah.
and so to many, she is in no need of introduction. But if you haven't heard about Miss Havisham, she is the eccentric spinster of the Charles Dickens novel Great Expectations. So she was left at the altar, I think, more than 10 years before she appears in the first scene of the story. And she was never able to move past the grief. And in a way, she held on to that moment of being a bride on her wedding night because she refused to accept that reality that she was left. And so she continues to wear her wedding dress for years and years to come and leaves the wedding set up, you know, the cake and the whole table exactly as it was, rotting on a dining table in her room where she locks out sunlight and she kind of just sulks in her grief for years and years. Eventually a couple of years down the line, she adopts Estella, who she initially adopts because she wants to protect her from a similar fate and does not want her to be heartbroken as well. And then as Estella grows more and more beautiful, she starts to use her for revenge against all men that she hates. And she's a very interesting character in that, you know, you just feel with her and you can't hate her even when she manipulates these little kids. Oh, sorry. So the main character in the book, who is Pip, becomes a victim of this revenge. Exactly. I just made her the star of the show. So Estella then, you know, she uses Estella to break Pip's heart and she's kind of just like playing this game with them both. And then there's these famous lines she says to Pip, like, as this is working. And she says to Pip, you know, love her, love her, love her. If she favors you, love her. If she wounds you, love her. If she tears your heart to pieces, and as it gets older and stronger, it will tear deeper. Love her, love her, love her. So she becomes obsessed with this situation and the fact that she's getting her revenge. But she's a character that develops. You know, you see the vulnerable sides of her, you see the obsessive side of her. And it's actually been said that Charles Dickens had a difficult relationship with his mom, and he somehow based the relationship between Pip and Miss Havisham on his relationship with his own mother.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, because, you know, early on in the story, Miss Havisham sends Pip to be an apprentice of a blacksmith, I think. And then his mom, Charles Dickens' mom, also insisted he continues to work in a factory when he was younger. And it was, you know, both of those situations was the last thing that the boys wanted, but their moms were kind of putting them in situations that they thought they did. She adds so much to the physical attributes to the story and, you know, in the setting that she's in how she dresses and expresses and talks and, you know, having all the clocks in her room at 20 minutes to nine, you know, the moment which he left her and kind of immortalizing that moment. And she also, you know, brings in, if you take Miss Havisham out of this story, I think there's not much of a story. Definitely when it comes to Great Expectations.
I think it's definitely less interesting for sure, because I still remember, I've forgotten a lot of the book, but the bit that I still remember is that bit where Miss Havisham is introduced. I still remember reading that and thinking, wow, this is really good. And I don't even really like Dickens that much, but I loved the Miss Havisham bit and I loved her as a character.
She's just phenomenal. There's something so attractive about how she's just stewing. She's decided to stew in what she thinks has been done to her and not letting that go. She's like, I have two paths. I can choose to move on with life, or I can choose to do this, and I am actively going to be this person. I was just going to say, as crazy as it is, it's quite relatable that you know, going about your life, you sometimes have that moment where you think, this person really annoyed me, but I'm going to overlook it, even though I would like to sit and complain about all the ways that they've annoyed me.
Yeah.
But she's just really leaning into that.
But similarly, you know, we all have moments that define our life where you're like, okay, there's the ahlam before this incident, and then there's the ahlam after this incident. And, you know, it just becomes one thing that really plays a huge part in who you are. And she took it quite literally in that that was the moment for Miss Havisham's life.
But she decided that.
Yeah.
I love that she's like you say, mummifying herself physically and like all of this lace and memory. It's heartbreaking, but it's like a car crash. You can't help but watch unfold. It's absolutely awful what she's gone through. But at the same time, any bit with Miss Havisham, you're like, I must read you. I must know all about you and your life.
And there's been so many, like there's been multiple film adaptations over the years since the 40s. And every time a different actress plays Miss Havisham, she does a different, she brings to life a different kind of Miss Havisham. And I was watching this yesterday also in the middle of trying to remember Miss Havisham and the research. And I was trying to see the performances of the different actresses that played her. And I feel like everyone made Miss Havisham their own in a different way. One was slightly calmer, one was a little bit more fiery, one was... So I think depending on who is reading that, Miss Havisham, I mean, any character is sort of from the eye of the reader.
Have you watched all of them?
I was rewatching them all yesterday in my research. Amazing. And I was like trying to analyze like who is a more accurate Miss Havisham. And I think the 1946 one was.
I will go away and watch this now. I don't think I've ever seen the 1946 one.
Okay, here's an idea for a special event for the festival next year. We'll have a Miss Havisham party. We'll have like a bridal party.
Yes.
All we'll have is wedding cake and we'll all wear wedding dresses. It'd be amazing.
For sure. I'm down. Let's do it.
Okay. This is actually recording, so we'll hold you to that.
Yes. Yeah. That's a festival director saying yay.
I do love the idea though. I love it.
Yeah, cool. For sure.
Well, that's a tough act to follow.
Yeah.
Should we go to you, Annabelle?
Oh, thanks, Andrea. I really appreciate it. This was very difficult. In the end, I decided rather than trying to go with something new that no one had really thought about before, or try and be original, I'm just going to go with the gut reaction I have anytime I think of an amazing supporting character that I want to get to know better. And it's Eowyn from The Lord of the Rings. And anybody who's watched the films will be familiar with her on screen, but she does come across slightly differently in the books. But in summary, Eowyn is a shield maiden of Rohan. She's a noble woman of the House of Rohan. It's, if you need reminding, Rohan is the bit of Middle Earth where they're kind of obsessed with horses. And the main theme of Eowyn's experience throughout the story is she's amazing and she can fight and she has the ability to like go into battle and help the men. And she is constantly told, stay home, be a nurse, look after the women and the children, et cetera, et cetera. And I absolutely love her as a character because of every moment where she defies this, either by telling people, no, this is wrong, I can fight just as well as you can, or the moments where she doesn't tell people and she just demonstrates it on the battlefield. She's this really like wonderfully feminist character, especially in a story that doesn't actually have many women, but I would argue that the presence of Eowyn more than makes up for the maybe lack of quantity in terms of quality. And what I want to read to you, also just bear in mind, this girl has grown up without a father. Her father has been killed by orcs. She found this out when she was a little girl. Her mum then died of grief after her father died, and she's been raised by her uncle. Her uncle then becomes sick because of a kind of being poisoned by one of the court advisors. And so she's in almost in a Miss Havisham sort of way, she's kind of isolated in this hall in Rohan, looking after this sickly uncle, feeling that her life is sort of wasting away. As the story progresses, there is a point later on in the books where Aragorn, who I think a lot of you will be familiar with, is going off on this big quest, essentially, to try and recruit an army. And she wants to go with him because she feels like she has something to contribute, which she does. And she's once again told to stay home because it's her duty and her people need her. Has Aragorn said this to any of her other male relatives, do you think?
Not.
No. No.
No.
No.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But Eowyn's response to this is absolutely beautiful. This is what she says in the book. All your words are but to say, you are a woman and your part is in the house. But when the men have died in battle and honor, you have leave to be burned in the house, for the men will need it no more. But I am of the house of all, and I'm not a serving woman. I can ride and wield blade, and I do not fear either pain or death. What do you fear, lady? He asked. A cage, she said. That is one of my favorite moments, and it's beautiful on the page. And also, even if you watch the film moment where this is portrayed is beautiful as well. And I get chills every time I watch it, because she's just this, she's absolutely terrified that her life will just be in that hall for the rest of her days. But she does get this wonderful moment where she defeats a character who, basically there's this prophecy that no man can defeat the Witch King of Angmar. And he's all kind of cocky on the battlefield, and he's saying awful, awful things. He's threatening that he will bear her away to the houses of lamentation beyond all darkness, where thy flesh shall be devoured and thy shriveled mind be left naked to the lidless eye. It's really dark, threatening stuff. And she's on the battlefield, and essentially what she does is she says, do what you will, but I will hinder it if I may. And he says, hinder me, thou fool, no living man may hinder me. And then it says, then Merry heard of all sounds in that hour the strangest. It seemed that Durnhelm laughed, and the clear voice was like the ring of steel. But no living man am I. You look upon a woman. Eowyn, I am Eamon's daughter. You stand between me and my lord and kin. Be gone if you be not deathless. For living or dark, undead, I will smite you if you touch him. And she stabs him in the face.
Ooh.
I like it. Tough talk back with action.
I love it. Yeah. She's my favorite character.
I just had a thought, and I'm wondering if the books that actually turn into film are the ones that have awesome secondary characters.
Maybe, because you can't have flat characters on screen.
Yeah.
You'd have to fill them out somehow.
Yeah. Mm. It can't all just be about one person or like the main character. It's got to be give and take.
Yeah. And even though they obviously do quite a lot of that in the development of the script, it really helps if they have distinct personalities and something to sort of build on.
And beyond, I mean, movies and, going back to Miss Havisham, she actually had an opera, you know, made in her name, Miss Havisham's Fire, and Caroline Duffy, former poet laureate in the UK, she actually wrote a very famous poem about her. So they kind of can live beyond just that one story, and they inspire other forms of art being distributed. Andrea, does your book have a film adaptation?
It does not, but it's recent, so it's probably still to come.
Okay.
So my book is, I'm sorry, I'm going to get you a book cover, although I don't actually have it. It's The Vanishing Half by Britt Bennett. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I don't know if you've read it. It was a really big hit last year. Everybody was reading it because it's wonderful. It's genuinely one of those that's really successful because it's great and not because it's controversial or easy to read or a celebrity author or so on. But before I tell you about the actual story of the book, I want to tell you about Arlie Jones. Arlie Jones is just such a great character. At a young age, sometime in the sort of late 40s, possibly early 50s, Arlie's parents ditched him with his aunt and uncle and split. And then he lived with them and never saw his parents again.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's apparently something that happened quite a lot. So he was there to help with sharecropping, which I don't know if you know what that is, I had to look it up. So sharecropping is when you don't own the land, but you work it as if you do. So you work really hard as a farmer, but you don't own it. So the produce that you produce isn't all yours. You have to give some to the landowner, and then you can sell some of whatever is remaining. So you don't get paid for all your work. You just have to work the land, hope that you get a good crop and get enough of it to sell to make money. And since you don't own it, you kind of drift along to where there's work. So Arlie was doing this. At one point as a teenager, they were living in this town in the south somewhere, which is a really strange town. This is before they ended racial segregation in the US. So in this town, it's a town for black people, but all the black people in this town are really, really fair. So they have kind of segregated themselves in a sense that everybody is so pale that they could pass for white almost. And he is not, so he is kind of looked down on. And in this town, he is helping the grocer deliver groceries, and he meets a girl who is beautiful, and there's something about her, and he starts bringing her fruit every day because that's the only thing he has, because, you know, he's dirt poor. So he brings her fruit, and they have a chat every day until one day her mum comes home early and sees him and kind of shoos him away and says, a man like that, you know, nothing but trouble. And she doesn't see him again because, you know, they move on to somewhere else to work the land in some other place. And so he has a really, really tough childhood, if you can call it that. And he drifts away. He leaves his aunt and uncle at some point and grows up, goes to prison for a little while for some petty crime. And then as he comes out of prison, he becomes by coincidence, he becomes a bounty hunter and finds that that is something he is really, really good at. So he can find pretty much anyone. And one day he gets a new assignment and he opens up the file and he sees this picture. And for a change, this is not someone who skipped up on bail. It's a man who's looking for his wife who's taken off with their young daughter. And he opens this file and he sees a photograph and it's Desiree. It's this girl that he met as a teenager.
Of course it is.
And something happens to him. So he's a silent, utilitarian man with no attachments in the world. But seeing her does something to him. So he goes to find her, which he does easily. She's back in this little town where she's run off to, and when he sees her, she's bruised and she's trying to hide it, but he can tell very clearly that she has run away from domestic abuse. So for the first time ever, he says, no, she is gone. She cannot be found. I have no idea where to look for her, but she probably went to New York. And that's how it all starts with them. And Desiree is actually the main character in this book, together with her twin sister Stella and their daughters who come into it a bit later on. And it's such a beautifully put together story. There's lots about trauma, and Stella and Desiree had seen their father being lynched by the Klan for something he hadn't do when they were really young. God. I know, it's terrible. It's about loss and it's about identity. And Desiree's twin sister Stella realized when they were slightly older than when she met early, but before she came back to town, she realized that she could pass for white and decides to do it. So she leaves with just a note for Desiree and says, I'm off, I've got to make the best life I can for myself, and goes off to be white, marries a white man, you know, has a whole life as you do, as a completely different person to the one that she was born as. So the book also talks about sort of what happens to you as a human, what happens to your soul when you pretend to be something for so long that you're actually not what you were before. Because pretending, in the act of pretending, we change. You do it for long enough, you're not what you were, and you're not the new thing either. So really fascinating. Those are the twins, and their daughters are the main people. But Early is such a real person, and he's so complex. He has all these flaws. Like, he can't stay put, and he didn't grow up with love. So he has all this, but he's still like the best person that he can be given his circumstances. I feel like he's written with so much warmth. And he's really attractive, like as a character. When you read him, you're like, oh, I love this man.
Yeah.
So this is how he's written right early in the story. It says, he wasn't a settling man. He was only good at getting lost. He'd mastered that particular skill as a boy rooted nowhere. spent his childhood, if you could call it that, sharecropping on farms in Janesville and Jenna, down south to New Roads and Palmetto. He'd been given to his aunt and uncle when he was 8 because they had no children and his parents had too many. He didn't know where his parents lived now, if they still lived. And he said he'd never thought about them. They gone, he said when asked. Gone, folks, is gone.
Wow. It's so interesting hearing your point of view of the story because I haven't read the book, but when you were telling earlier story, like I couldn't even imagine someone else being the protagonist because of your point of view of explaining his character. And I would totally read the book of his story. Like I feel like it's such a deep story on its own that I'm interested now to see how it interacts with the main story of the novel, yeah. With Desiree.
That's my recommendation. It's a wonderful book. So if you haven't read it, you should.
This is reminding me of like creative writing courses where you do character building and they say, okay, pick your 5 characters and then give them like so many detailed qualities of who they are and how they behave in different circumstances and really, really believe them. And so I guess these writers do a really good job at doing that.
Yes. Yeah. But I mean, I think if we have to give the prize right now, the big golden trophy, the boundless gold trophy, I think it has to go to Miss Havisham anyway.
I think so. I think so too. And actually, what's interesting is Jasper Ford, who is our guest author for this episode, has also featured Miss Havisham in his work, which is such a coincidence because I actually had no idea.
I absolutely love the concept of the Thursday Next series where you can step into books and interact with the characters. Could you imagine how awesome that would be?
Very.
And how
cool.
Disappointing in some circumstances.
Yeah. So who would you want to actually meet? Would you want to meet Miss Havisham? Or I mean, I feel like she'd be a fairly abrasive conversationalist.
Yeah. Yes. I'm good watching her from afar. Yeah. Seeing her like hurt the people around her, just not me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Who would you want to meet, Annabelle?
I think I'd probably want to meet someone from a Jane Austen novel. So probably Eleanor Dashwood, because I think she's pretty cool.
Yeah. I need to give that some more thought, really.
Yeah.
But we should ask Jasper. I wonder if the whole world building all just stems from his sort of wishful thinking. You know, you sit one day thinking, gosh, it'd be great if I could meet Sherlock Holmes, because I'd want to ask him this, and then everything just grew from there.
Maybe. What would you ask Sherlock Holmes? Why are you so unpleasant? Get that you're clever, but be nice.
Should we ask him?
Yes, we should ask him for sure.
Let's bring him in.
I am so excited to welcome the creator of the wildly funny and insanely popular Thursday Next series, the Nursery Crime series, the Last Dragon Slayer books, as well as some wonderful standalone books, including the recent novel, The Constant Rabbit. It is the one and only Jasper Ford. Jasper, we're so happy you could join us today.
Thank you very much. I'm delighted to be here. I'm sorry I was slightly late. I was composing a sarcastic letter to someone on eBay, which was, I mean, I sold a very, very cheap camera and I described, it was only 25 quid, right? So like very small amount of money. And I described everything was wrong with it. And the buyer then found something, another small thing that was wrong with it and wanted a partial refund on 25 quid. And I went, really? Really? Anyway, so I just gave him that. I said, look, have this on me. You clearly need the money more than I do. So I was writing a sarcastic letter and it was very sarcastic. And then I thought it was too sarcastic. So then I was editing it. And all of a sudden it was 9:05. And I suddenly realized that instead of being sarcastic on eBay, I should be talking to you guys. So I'm sorry I'm slightly late, but there you go.
I mean, don't you get to charge a premium just for the fact that the camera belonged to Jasper Ford?
Oh, I wish. Oh, I wish I was that famous. Sadly, no. It's like a sort an unsigned book by me is probably worth more than a signed book because it's, you know, has rarity value.
I'm sure that's not
you
true.
Are too modest.
No, I don't think so.
I have a question about people on eBay. Do you ever have one of those encounters with someone really random wanting a refund on a rugby camera where you think, actually, this is something. This is going to be a human-sized rabbit in my next story.
Yeah, there's a funny thing about writing is that because people say, you know, oh, where'd you get your ideas from? Or, you know, what... you know, which author, you know, most wants you to write, you know, which is your sort of greatest influence. And the fact is that you just get this stuff from everywhere, and even sort of random sort of, you know, conversations with people on eBay. And because people are constantly trying to scam you on eBay, especially if you have things which are slightly more expensive and they're trying to sell it. And it's very clever because you're being sort of almost sort of, someone's playing a long con, you know, it's like the sting on eBay, and you can see it coming and you go, oh, this is interesting, let's see it run. And then you can see all this sort of subterfuge going on, and they're trying to use words because they've only got text to try and make them believe that they are genuine, and that somehow you're going to do this really good deal, or you're gonna... I had a great one where someone wanted... I had a lens I was selling, and it was a lot, it was like 1,200 quid. And there was this long conversation with this person. And what he wanted me to do is, for sort of cash flow reasons, was to sell me the lens, like for 400 quid, and then sell me the box, right, 4 weeks later. Yeah, and I go, wow, so yeah, you're just going to get a lens for 400 quid, and then you're never going to buy the box. Clearly, who's going to buy an empty box? But it was, I let it kind of run, because it was very interesting seeing what was going on, and that the language he was using to try and make me think that he was this really wonderful, sweet guy who was in pecuniary circumstances. So when you're writing, you do take everything from everywhere, and conversations, you know, with people, things you read, things you see on TV, news stories in particular, you know, it all just goes into the mix. So it all turns up somewhere. It's a bit weird.
So Jasper, today's episode is about strong supporting characters, and we've been talking about them earlier on. And so we wanted to ask you, is there a specific supporting character in your stories which you think is calling out for a bigger story, or a story of their own even?
Yeah, this is an interesting one, actually, because it came about because people were saying, and it's my standard answer when people say, you know, Jasper, you write strong female characters, you know, this is like really good. And I'm going, well, yes, it is. But I think what is of equal importance, and perhaps more subtle, is to have male secondary characters who are really okay with having a strong female character. And I think that's really, really important. And the character I really like is Landon, who is Thursday Next's partner in the Thursday Next series. And he is, you know, clearly very, very supportive, and he could have had a career of his own, but I think he sort of felt that actually what he was doing was more important in a support role than it was actually, you know, having his own career and everything else. So I think he was kind of looking after the kids and supporting Thursday, who is an extraordinary individual. And they clearly, you know, love each other, you know, very, very deeply. And I kind of like that idea in a weird kind of way. So in a later book that I wrote called Shades of Grey, I have a protagonist. The main protagonist, Eddie Russet, is a kind of slightly weak, spineless kind of character who meets this extraordinary woman. And it's through their interaction that perhaps he finds, you know, a bit more of an understanding for himself. But she's very much the most powerful sort of character in the book, but she's actually a secondary character. So I kind of like doing that. It was like seeing it from the other point of view. It was kind of book from Landon's point of view, if you like. And I think this is really important, because it's okay to have strong, it's very good to have strong, you know, female characters, but unless you can have supportive characters who are male next to them, you know, I think you're kind of missing a trick.
That's really interesting. Well, actually, talking about strong female supporting characters as well, each of us picked our favorite supporting character, and the character that won this episode was Miss Havisham. And,
Oh, right. Okay.
And of course, Miss Havisham's made an appearance in your work as well. And could you tell us a little bit more about why Miss Havisham made an appearance, what she meant to you?
Well, I have to sort of unpack this slightly. So when you're writing books about with literary characters in them, so the Thirds in Next series, so anyone who doesn't know, the first in the series was called The Eyre Affair. And Jane Eyre is kidnapped, and my protagonist, Thursday Next, has to find out who's kidnapped Jane Eyre and get her back in her book. Now, it's a sort of knockabout kind of odd, you know, real odd mix of a book with all sorts of weird genres kicking around, you know, and there's a bit of horror in it and, you know, alternative technology and all, you know, parallel worlds and all kinds of stuff. But it does have as its central core this idea about Jane Eyre being kidnapped out of Jane Eyre. Now, some people are not or don't see themselves as literary or see themselves as literary books as something that is not something they do. You know, that is something that people study. It's way up there. It's like Shakespeare. It's, you know, oh, my God, I don't know about that. And so a lot of the book was about actually saying, no, we can have this back. We can take this back from, you know, the sort of stuffy sort of academia. And I apologize to all stuffy academics out there. But it has been made into a study text, right? You know, Shakespeare is a kind of study text. And because we're sort of made to read it at school, that's what it can be going into your adult life. And you really, really, you're missing out if you're saying, I'm not going to do that. So the idea of Jane Eyre, bringing Jane Eyre into this kind of mix was me saying, I want this back. You know, this was taken from me. This is a great story, Jane Eyre, and I want it back and I want to have fun with it. But it's very difficult to actually write literary books if you don't 100% know that people know the characters you're talking about. Right. So Jane Eyre, you know, people say, why Jane Eyre? And I go, it had to be Jane Eyre because the name of the book is Jane Eyre. And even if you haven't read Jane Eyre, you'd kind of know vaguely what Jane Eyre is about. So it was very important. It was Jane Eyre. So then after that, because if I would made it about an obscure character in a Voltaire novel, it stops being knockabout fun and it starts being esoteric and pompous. And I was so not wanting this book to be esoteric and pompous, you know. So anyway, so what happens then, going on to Miss Havisham eventually, is that I have to use characters that people know, right? That people already have an empathy with. And Miss Havisham is, of course, one of those fantastic, iconic characters. You know, if you were to say to anyone, look, name a character out of Dickens, they'd go, I suppose David Copperfield, maybe. Miss Havisham, because of the rotting wedding bell. I totally got that. So that was part of it, was actually me taking Miss Havisham. The feeling, you know, that we generally have in our heads of her is that she's very old, very elderly. That's not necessarily true. If you read the book, she could actually be only in her late 20s. But I wanted to sort of take her and then play with the character in a sort of fun way. I decided to make her quite elderly, but also this sort of bizarre character who is a mixture of a kind of P.G. Woodhouse aunt, you know, and maybe travels with my aunt is from the Graham Greene book as well. I think that sort of character, or maybe there's all sorts of women in fiction that she could be. And then just play with it in an interesting way and says, no, she likes fast cars, she likes fast boats, and she has this, you know, real, you know, dynamic sort of character. And just take it away from that idea of this very sad elderly woman, you know, in her rotting wedding veil, you know, presiding over this, you know, dust and rat covered, you know, remnants of her wedding table. And it's like, okay, you've had that for like hundreds of years now, well, 130, 140 years. I'm going to give you something new to play with. You know, I'm going to give you a fast car because, you know, that's the kind of guy I am. So it's complex, but it's playing with not only what we've been given by Dickens, how we see Dickens, in an academic light, and how I can take that, repackage it in an interesting way and say, this is fun, this is cool, classics are great, read more Dickens, Shakespeare is fantastic, go for it.
I think it's lovely that you managed to give Miss Havisham sort of a better life than the lot that she'd been dealt in the original novel. So in some way, like, is there a character that you that you didn't actually get to work into any of your books that you think had kind of a hard life in their novel that you'd like to let them have a bit of fun in one of your novels?
Yeah, God, that's a good question. Very good. I'm trying to think of examples now that I could have done a similar thing with. I don't think so. I mean, there are always sort of little walk-on parts that I want to use for characters, and the whole series is peppered with little characters who just, you know, come on and do something and then go. Nothing kind of springs to mind that I wanted to use Eeyore, you know, from Winnie the Pooh. Eeyore was great, and it's like, you know, because it kind of really sort of, you know, very depressed kind of character, feeling very low all the time, and you know very negative about things, and I kind of wanted to do something with Eeyore, and that'd be quite fun. But then I was told that Eeyore actually belongs to Disney.
Oh.
And they don't let you do anything.
They own everything.
You know,
they do.
And they're very litigious, so it kind of wouldn't be worth it. So I think I mention Eeyore, which is, you can do that. You can say, oh, look, Eeyore's just walked in the door. Right. But then you can't have Eeyore say anything. Mm. You know, so I actually did that joke with Harry Potter. It was like Harry Potter was going to make an appearance in the book, and everyone got really excited and was like getting their autograph books out. And then I think he's outside the door. And, oh, no, hang on. Sorry, he can't come in because of copyright reasons. And that was the gag. So, you know, so you have these problems. And then interestingly, sometimes that with writing, you can't do one thing. So you do something else, and then you find actually there's something, you know, more exciting behind the other door. So, yeah, I like the Thursday Next series for that reason, because it's a lot of sort of, you know, shuffling around and moving around, just playing with everything.
So that's obviously been a super popular series. Was it difficult? Because The Heir Affair was your first book, right? Was it difficult to find a home for that?
It was an odd one, actually. It wasn't, oddly enough, it wasn't actually my first book. This is actually another quite a really, really good question. It wasn't my first book. I did two others, the nursery crime series, which were police procedurals based on nursery rhymes. So the first one was about Humpty Dumpty, and the second one, not a nursery rhyme, was about the Three Bears. So I wrote those first of all, and they were like, for me, they are sort of fairly straight novels. They're police procedurals. You have a crime, you have a victim, and, you know, you have to find out who did it and the motivation and all the rest of it. And I wrote those two books, and I really thought that I would be able to get them published. Who would not want to know, right? You know, who really killed Humpty Dumpty, or, you know, what was going on in the Three Bears,
right?
You know, when what was Goldilocks up to, you know, because clearly there's a lot more to this story than meets the eye. Those two were met with, you know, deafening silence from agents and publishers and everything else. And we're going back to like 93, 94 now. And I thought, oh, okay, well, that's odd. I really, really thought that they could, you know, get a sale. So after that, it was either, the decision was either to go, well, okay, that's it for me for writing. You know, I'm just going to stop, because it's clearly not working if no one wants to read, you know, about the Three Bears. And so I could have done that. I could have written another, you know, nursery crime. I could have written something more, even more straight, like, you know, a completely kind of, you know, human drama, you know, doing what other people do. And then I thought, actually, no, I'm enjoying myself here. Why don't I just write exactly what I want to write? Right. Take an idea that I had for a while about Jane Eyre being kidnapped out of Jane Eyre, make that work in the most bizarre world I can imagine, and every single idea I can just bung into it. And it doesn't make any difference. I can have a time traveling father in a way that time travel can't work, full of paradoxes. I can have horror. I can do this. I can do that. I can have her drive my favorite car. It doesn't matter what I put in, because no one's going to publish this. If they didn't want the nursery crime books, you know, they're really not going to go for this. So for me, The Heir Affair was me being exactly what I wanted to be. Right. This is just me absolutely with ideas, you know, just fizzing with ideas, endlessly adding more layers, you know. Right, let's put in Neanderthals. Well, yeah, we're going to have them in the sequel. Great. So let's have one right at the end, you know, as if from nowhere, you know, a Neanderthal pops up. And what happened then was, of course, that was the book that got picked up by my publishers. because something had happened in between writing The Nursery Crime and writing this book. And what had happened was that I was no longer thinking about being published. I was writing exactly what I wanted to write. And this is something I say to anyone who is out there wanting to be an author, is do what you want to do. Just ignore all that stuff. You know, don't read bestsellers and think, I'm going to write something like this. You know, I'm going to write about elephants and chocolate and I don't know, anything. Or, you know,
you read many bestsellers?
The meaning of another transcendental number, the meaning of the square root of two, for instance. You know, let's do that sort of stuff. And it's like, no, you've got to do your own work. You've got to dance your own steps and do your own thing, because it shows in the final book. And people enjoy seeing, you know, a writer in the raw, if you will, just doing exactly what they want to do. So sorry, it's again a rather long answer, but that was why it got picked up. That's exactly why it got picked up. But they were not sure that it was going to sell at all. They said, this is not what Hodder do. This was the end of the, this was published in 2000. It was the end of the 90s, which was, you know, a lad lit, chick lit, that kind of stuff. And it really wasn't the sort of book that they thought. And it's, it's still selling today.
Yeah. I remember I worked in a bookshop when that came out, and I remember everybody passing it round and going, this is amazing. This is our world and people can step into it. Mm. It was brilliant. Mm.
I have a question about Rick Astley. So in The Constant Rabbit, I haven't read it yet, but I have heard that apparently Rick Astley makes an appearance, which at this point, after everything that I've read and everything you've told us, doesn't surprise me. Mm. But I just wondered specifically, why are you now Rickrolling people? And do you see Rick Astley becoming a bigger part of any future books? Or again, do we like go into copyright issues there?
Yeah, again, this is a very interesting... Right, so I have pledged that there is a mention. Rick Astley doesn't appear in the book. He is mentioned in the book.
He's mentioned.
And in every book I will write from now on, Rick Astley gets a mention, right? and the reason for this is that I wanted him to appear in Early Riser. Right. I actually wanted him to appear and have a little thing to say. And he turns up as in Early Riser. It's a thriller set in a world in which humans have always hibernated. And there are some humans who have gone too far deep into hibernation and they've suffered a neural collapse and they emerge as nightwalkers, which is like a zombie. Right. And I wanted Rick Astley to be one of these zombies. And these nightwalkers, they have a sort of vestigial, vague memory of something that they once did, like shopping or, I don't know, or a poem. And he does the line from his most famous song, right? And that became integral to the plot. But if you're going to feature Rick Astley and you're going to use lines from a song, right, Something Got Me Started, then they have to be cleared. And so we started trying to get them cleared, right? It, with the internet, or, you know, with email, if you don't get a reply, it's a no, right? Basically, that's what you know. So we could not get them to agree to the releasing the song lines. That's from a different company. That's not Rick Astley. And we just could not reach Rick Astley to ask him if he would like to be a zombie in a book. So in the end, I had to change it to Carmen Miranda in The Fruit Hat. So if anyone's read the book, and the Carmen Miranda Fruit Hat character used to be Rick Astley, but is now no longer. And I went, damn, because I think he would have gone for it, because he's a kind of cool guy. But we couldn't clear it. And legal, actually, in Hodder said, well, I think it's all right, because it's not defamatory. And he could only sue me if it was defamatory, really. But I said, well, you know, he's a sweet guy. And why would I want to have Rick Astley angry at me? You know, that would be a bad thing. You know,
he's never going to let you down or give you up, though.
Thank you. Exactly. So, you know, why would you want to let down, you know, by me to Rick Astley? So I just put the references now, just because it's a little internal in joke. And it's just literally a reference to, you know, Rick Astley collection or a Rick Astley CD or something like that. And it always just goes in there now. But also, I mean, the reason I put Carmen Miranda back is because the thing you can do with books is is you can reinvigorate pop culture references that have fallen out of favor. Because I have a great joke about the TV series Bonanza, right? But no one knows what Bonanza is these days. So that joke, and it's a good joke, is now dead in the water because the pop culture references have died, right? And I think that's sort of slightly annoying because I think pop culture references should stay. So if I'm mentioning Carmen Miranda in a Foot Hat, someone will say, I wonder who Carmen Miranda is, you know, if they don't know. And then they'll look up Carmen Miranda on YouTube or the internet or whatever, and they go, oh my God, that's just so brilliant. She's just this amazing character. So I'm trying to keep these pop culture references alive because I think a world with Carmen Miranda and her fruit hat in it is a better world.
Hear, hear.
Thank you.
I hate for this to end, but that is all we have time for this week. If you've not read the Thursday Next series, I suggest you start with The Air Affair and work your way through them. Also, do pick up The Constant Rabbit and remember to be kind to all beings, man or rabbit. Jasper, please tell us, is there another book on the way?
There is. So the Dragon Slayer 4, which is called The Great Troll War, that will be coming out in September, and that will finish the Dragon Slayer series. Four books. I've actually finished a series, so I've never done that before. It was very exciting. I like it. I really like it. It's a great sort of season finale, and I hope other people do. It's a children's book, but there's lots of adult stuff in it too, which should be interesting to everyone as they wait for the next Thursday Next or Shades of Grey or whatever they're waiting for.
Fantastic. Looking forward to that. This has been so great. Thanks a million for joining us today. Everybody listening, don't forget to fill out the survey to win some great books. The link is in the show notes. Until next time, take care.